Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better listen in public, might make your stomach hurt. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to unwind, you better get that box wine. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to get your snack, you better hurry right back though. It's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Purple Pants Podcast, episode 176, The Roster. I serve as your humble and also gracious host, Bryce Isaiah, and I'm so excited that you have tuned in to this week's brand new episode. If you could be so kind to ensure that you are subscribed to the Purple Pants Podcast, we are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you can find podcasts. The Purple Pants Podcast awaits for you to hit subscribe, write a review, and give your baby boy some 5 stars. What's the tea, Purple Pants Posse? I hope that everyone is doing well. I hope this podcast finds you in good spirits. And if not, I hope this podcast can put a smile on your face. I had a real chill weekend. It was given very much brunch. Hung out with a couple of friends this weekend. We went to one brunch, then on Sunday, went to another brunch. Like, listen, it was giving very much so brunch, but it was great to be outside. It was definitely warm in the city of Philadelphia. But a little upset because I'm, you know, minding my business, scrolling through the Instagram, and there's this like trending topic of Sesame Place in Philadelphia, which is kind of near like Oxford Valley in the Langhorne area. But there are like these images of these black children. You know, when you go to Sesame Street, you be waiting in a parade and there are multiple characters that are like saying and waving and hello to kids. And then when they get to the black children, they just look at them and walk by. Now, you think this would be an isolated incident. This was like the trending topic all, you know, weekend. And I'm like, oh my God, not from Philly. But there are about 4 other videos coming out from the same place in Philadelphia where there are other black children and the characters are going up to all the other children that happen not to be black and touching, giving them high fives. And then the black children are sitting there with their hands up and the characters walking by. Now, let me just be clear. Sesame Place had put out a statement saying that, you know, this is not their policy and they don't stand for discrimination. However, first of all, anytime you trying to issue an apology and it has a however in it, baby, it's not giving what it's supposed to give. And they're saying that due to the costumes, at times they can't see on a lower level. Well, the kids that they were saying hello to next to the black children, you could see. So I'm going to need you to get yourself together, Sesame Street, Sesame Place, because Disney World would never, okay? Blue's Clues would never. Sesame Street or Sesame Place here in Philadelphia, get it together because we don't like the discrimination and you especially not discriminating against these beautiful brown babies. Now, that had me all hot. And do you ever like find something and you go down this rabbit hole? Like, you know, listen, I have a doctorate degree in reading the comments because I just, whenever I see a trending topic, my first avenue is to go to the post. I read the comments. And mind you, that can take like 2 hours, like I literally go down the rabbit hole because then it's like I'll see a comment that I don't like or I'll see a comment that I agree. And then I want to like break the comment down and see what the people are commenting about. Then I went to the Twitter. Okay. Then there are more videos on Twitter. There are other people that were at Sesame Place like maybe last year or not this weekend that they thought that they had innocent videos of their children, like, you know, in the parade dancing. And after this kind of scandal came out, they kind of revisited their footage and they realized that their kids was snubbed as well. So it's crazy. So if you haven't read about this or seen about it, just Google the hashtag Sesame Place in Philadelphia. Let me know what you think, Posse, because I listen. and I get embroiled and stuff like that. I hate it. Oof, it just boils my blood. But anyway, I just wanted to, that was on my topic, on my mind, so I wanted to share that. But I hope everyone was having a really good weekend. You know me, like I said, baby boy was brunching. I'm really excited about this week's episode. Okay, P-Valley is on a one-week break. What P-Valley think? This is the NFL? No. Y'all not gonna kill Big T off. You have Uncle Cliff and Lil Murder reconnect, and then we gotta go a week off. Baby, I was so hot when I got up Sunday morning, and I thought I was gonna get me a P-Valley episode, because not only do I love podcasting about it with Chappelle and Sharia, I love the show. So I love to watch it. So I was a little disappointed this Sunday. So then I said, you know what? Let me go take myself to brunch and have a mimosa. But I'm really excited about this week's episode. We got the church announcements, and it's giving a play-by-play. And we have our baby boy Jack Atkins back to help me cover our play-by-play segment. We first of all talk about what Jack has been up to this summer. And then we are going down the roster of some trending topics in the sports realm. We are talking about the Drew League. We are talking about Kyrie and KD. We are talking the rookies of 2022, and you know I'm excited about that. We're talking about Juan Soto and this $440 million contract, and we also are talking about the college swimmer Leah Thomas. And so it is a great episode, great discussions, and of course Ms. Barb is back dropping off some positivity this week with Barb's message, and we got the freak of the week. So listen, let's get this roster rolling.
Welcome to church. Welcome to church. It's a church announcement, so now. Welcome to church.
This week on the church announcements, I just want to make sure the posse is aware that we are covering CBS, the Challenge USA, here on the Purple Pants podcast. So you can tune in every Saturday and hear Wendell and myself with some special guests break it down. And if the audio podcast is just not enough for you, you can head over to Wendell Holland's YouTube. First of all, subscribe, show your baby boy some love, and you can watch the podcast as well, because, you know, listen, you'd all be acting crazy. You know, Wendell be acting crazy. You know, we'd be dropping gems in the Bricktionary and breaking it all down. But I just want to make sure that you knew, posse, that we are covering the CBS The Challenge. So make sure you support your baby boys and tune in.
It's a purple pants play by play. I'm shooting three for every day. Making it feel A-okay. It's a purple pants play by play.
And we are back this month with your Purple Pants play by play. But fricker fricker, this month we are joined none other than the baby boy that is one third of the Survivor News. You might know him from the Circle, or whoo, it's getting hot in here because the floor is lava. We are welcoming back to the podcast the Jack that is the Atkins. Baby boy, how are you?
Bryce, what is up? I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. You know the baby boy loves some Survivor News, but a little known fact, I'm also a big sports fan, so I'm so excited to talk some sports with you. Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, I've been getting into my sports since I've been covering play-by-play on the podcast, and, you know, I love sports. I didn't realize my love of sports, not necessarily, like, I still think sports is kind of boring, but whoa. I think when I add my flavor of, oh, zaddies, and I add the flavor of, I really love, like, the, not the drama, but I didn't realize that, like, behind the scenes of sports is such, like, a soap opera.
Definitely, definitely. And obviously, you know, it's the Survivor offseason right now, too. So it's just great to be back on the podcast, get back in touch with the posse and talk about something new. But I totally agree with you. I don't always watch a whole lot of games, but just following along with everything going on, all the amazing players and their like kind of the life behind the scenes is just a really cool thing to follow along with.
Yeah, no, it's for sure. And I mean, my avenue is the zaddies, but, you know, I'm
of course, of course.
You're not here no so much for the zaddies, but it's okay. I keep you posted. But before we get into this week's play-by-play roster, I'm curious to know, like, what you've been doing since we've last left off on the Survivor News. I was flicking through the Netflix, and I saw
two of my favorite baby boys. I saw Courtney from The Circle season 2, and I saw Jack. Like, what? Give us the scoop. Ooh. On the floor is lava.
Yeah, so like you said, we did a episode of The Floor is Lava season 2 episode 5. It was like a Netflix reality face off. So it was Team Circle versus Team Too Hot to Handle versus I think Hype House, some content creators. And thankfully they invited me, Savannah, and Courtney from my season to all team up. Not only good friends from my season. So we were so excited to be able to hang out, film another show with Netflix. I won't spoil too much, but it was a brief, you know, appearance. and so, you know, as far as career moves go, it wasn't necessarily a game changer, but it was definitely a blessing to be able to get back on the screen and be able to compete with some friends in a really fun challenge.
Yeah, and if you're not following Jack on TikTok, make sure you get to the Jack Atkins, because I feel like I love TikTok. I don't post a lot. I need to get better at it, but my sleep schedule is like all effed up. So I'm up at, well, I don't even want to talk times with Jack, because Jack and I have this ongoing argument, because every day or whenever I call Jack, it's 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And Jack's like, sorry, I missed your call. I was asleep. But anyway, I get up sometimes at like 5 a.m. in the morning, and I love to do a good twit, like a TikTok peruse. I love the For You. And like, you know, I'm getting my little cooking. I'm finding out about Philly. But I like recently ran into your TikTok on the floor. Is lava.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, if you have not seen that. So, I mean, yeah, baby boy took a tumble, but, you know, he did it in the best possible way. But I guess the question is the floor really lava?
Oh, man, you got to hop on the TikTok for that. No, I'm playing. The floor, believe it or not actually lava.
No.
But it is. I think a lot of people... I see a lot of guesses, and it's actually it's pretty different than what I think people. It's almost like a honey like liquid, so it's very thick. And so when you fall in, it just kind of all like coats you, and you have to like get out. You got to like take a towel, go take a shower. It's not like a watery thing. It's very like a viscous substance.
Come on, viscous.
But yeah, it was a good experience though. It was super cool. But the floor was not actually lava. I found that out firsthand.
Darn it! What was your preparation like for preparing for the floor is lava?
To keep it real with you, I think I watched one episode. I don't think Savannah watched any. I don't think she knew what the show was.
Oh my gosh, Savannah.
She just showed up and did her thing. We strategized a little bit, but at the end of the day, it was a very challenging course. So, and the one thing I will say that I didn't realize watching at home is the lava substance, they have it like bubbling and everything, so it gets on all the different surfaces. And so when you're trying to jump from surface to surface, exactly, it's super slippery. So, you know, the distance of the jump might not be hard, but it's like if you can't get a little running start, or you can't, you know what I mean, you have to really just like squat down and leap for it. Or when you jump, the surface you're landing on is also slippery, so you might be doing kind of a routine jump, but then your foot might slip out from under you, and before you know it, you in the lava. So.
Oh, listen, and y'all need to head over to Jack's TikTok and watch his TikTok on the floor is lava, and we'll see how slippery the surface is. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about, Jack, is that I love following Jack on Instagram, because I love his stories, and you recently were in, was it France? Was it Italy?
Mm-hmm. France.
Or merci beaucoup. I love anytime Jack, and if you follow Jack on Instagram, you know anytime Jack has to go to an airport, he loves to ask the followers, what's up? Traveling? Ask me. You know, you do your own little AMA. And so my one thing that I just be wanting to know is, what is the thought process behind when you answer those questions? The selfies that you post to go along with it, do you like double take them? Because like, if any of y'all watch and know what I'm talking about, Jack be giving model. I be like, okay, Jack with the straight little eyes piercing through, chin down, like you know, Jack be serving Zaddy on the low. Like, is there any thought process, or like, do you take multiple photos, or is it just snap it and you go?
you know, sometimes it's a snap and go type of situation. But I don't see, I could see why it comes across that way, but I don't want it to look like I'm too serious. So sometimes I try to mix in, you know, maybe a goofy look. But, you know, if I'm answering, you know, 20, 30 questions, I feel like I just got to have a little average baseline, just a little average zaddy look. But I don't know. It's weird because I don't know what to put in the background sometimes. So I just kind of just go almost like a Snapchat vibe with the question over it. But sometimes I'll take the picture of myself and I'll be like, damn, I look like kind of a D-bag. I'll be answering some. And a lot of times, you know, I like to troll a little bit and some of the answers are just be like kind of satirical. So it'll just be like my face stone cold and then some random crazy answer that's super out of pocket. But I don't know. You're the first person to kind of comment on my selfies on there, but people seem to enjoy some of the questions, so I love
doing those. I love, it's not even the questions, it's your responses, it's your like dry sense of you're hella funny, but then the dry humor, and then also it also takes a life of its own when you read it, because it's like you'd be like, what did he just say? Then you'd be like, oh, you know what, that's Jack. I love it. So I love when Jack travels, and if you're not following him, you need to follow him to get on his travel and ask him some questions. Now also, you are currently in LA, is that correct?
Yes, sir. I've been here for actually a month as of today. So,
okay, happy 1 month. Now we know you did not graduate yet. You will be graduating in this December from the University of Chicago. Come on, class of 2022.
Barely.
But yeah, no, that's exciting. And any plans in LA? Mind you, sorry y'all, because I'm just catching up with Jack, because mind you, Jack like to call me 7 o'clock in the morning when he getting back in, so I don't always be coherent, or Jack don't be coherent, so I'm just checking in with the baby boy. But like, what are the plans for the summer?
So yeah, this summer is kind of an interesting one. As you said, I'm heading back to school for my last semester at the end of September, and so you know, I'm still sort of in that weird zone of like the talent side from doing all the stuff with Netflix, but it's obviously faded off. So I'm trying to figure out, you know, because I have to go back to school, fortunately, I have a little bit of money saved up. So this summer I said, hey, you know, let me give this talent thing a real chance to shine and kind of give myself that opportunity to really go for it. Because obviously with the reality TV stuff, it's like, yeah, you can. You know, you got to give yourself the flowers or whatever and take a moment to really enjoy it. Right. But with the circle, it's like there wasn't really a next move. You know, I wasn't getting ready for, you know, the next reality show or anything. So now I'm trying to this summer really give myself a chance to explore sort of the acting realm, something that I've always been interested in. So I'm taking a few acting classes. I'm hoping to start doing some auditions soon. I've been waiting on those because obviously I just got some headshots done. Hopefully that's given some zaddy.
I didn't see them yet. I need to see the first.
I haven't gotten the finished product yet. But you know, shout out to Matt Tenty. If you're in that great headshots, I'm waiting for the finished product. But you know, I got a sneak peek. They looked solid. But obviously, before I started doing the auditions, I needed to get some headshots. And then I also want. I'm taking two different classes right now. So I'm trying to get those, you know, my bases covered to really develop some skills before I go for it. So I'm giving that a spin this summer. If it starts going somewhere, hopefully we can continue that either back in Chicago or when we come back after I graduate. But if not, you know, I'm a realist, so I have some backup plans for more formal sorts of jobs. But I'm just figuring all that out. I'm very fortunate, you know, right now to have the opportunity through, you know, the Netflix stuff and through some of the fortunately being able to save up some money and things like that. And then obviously, you know, having that fallback of going back to school this fall gives me that sort of 3 month period to be like, hey, I can really explore and go for whatever I want this summer. So very grateful for that. It's been a lot of fun so far. I've really been enjoying some of the acting stuff. It's so different than reality TV. 'Cause you know, reality TV, you're obviously pretty much just being yourself. Acting is almost an opportunity to embrace those different, you know, characters or personas or different things that are within you and explore those emotions more and kind of empathize with the different characters. So that's been a really fun sort of exploration so far. So it's been about a month and I'm enjoying it, and I'm excited to hopefully do some auditions and stuff soon.
Okay. Are you taking any improv classes?
So I auditioned for this improv, I guess, school. It's called the Groundlings. It's almost like a Second City SNL type of school.
Okay.
And I passed the audition, but I'm currently trying to find classes that will fit with my schedule. And so to keep it short, I'm having a hard time finding classes that I can take within the scope of this summer, because obviously I want to make sure I can take them all while I'm out here before I go back to Chicago. But the passing of the audition lasts for a year. So worst case, when I come back out in December, I'll take those classes through the Groundlings. So I did improv in high school. I don't know if y'all knew that, but I enjoy that a lot too. So I'm really excited whenever I get the opportunity to do those classes too, to just explore that. And I'm just hoping to really develop myself more as a sort of, you know, actor, improver, or whatever.
Yes, get it together. Well, lucky for you, you are in the perfect place for the Purple Pants improv scene. So let's act out a scene real quick and let's test your improv. I'm thinking of a scene. You are the older brother, Nick. I am a younger brother. I'm coming home from school and I'm getting bullied. Okay, it's a 2-minute scene. And wait, what's your name again? I said Nick. Okay, Nick. And I'm Trevor.
Okay,
Nick, I'm Trevor. Right. Okay, and action. Hey, Nick.
Hey, little bro. How was school today?
It was okay.
Was Mrs. Cooper giving you a hard time in class?
No, Miss Cooper was cool. I love social studies, so it's amazing. But yeah, no, I just had a hard time on the bus.
What happened on the bus?
You know those kids up the street, the Jacobs brothers, they always are teasing me because of my book bag and because I like Taylor Swift. So they were giving me a hard time on the bus.
I hate those damn Jacobs brothers. Trevor, you know what? You know, they might not have the taste for Taylor Swift. That'll come. What did they say about your book bag? Were you two strapping again?
I was. I have a lot of books and I don't want them to fall.
I might have to bully you for that, Trevor. You got to go one strap. Everyone knows that's the cool way to hold the book bag.
I can't have my history and my economics book and my home ec and my Taylor Swift CDs all. I'm scared I might drop them. So I've got to make sure I've got the two strap and I make sure they're like super tight so that if somebody hits it, I am low to the ground.
Well, what did they say to you about that? Did they say some unsavory words?
They're just like, who wears two straps?
I mean, they're not wrong, but I'll call the elder Jacob's brother up, Jacob Jacobs, and I'll have a word with him.
they're not wrong.
I'll tell him, hey, I know Trevor, you know, he's still understanding how to strap up his book bag. You know, I don't know why this man's got his economics books. He's in the third grade.
I want to be prepared for the world.
Yeah.
And scene. Okay, you get an A for effort, but an F for a consoling big brother check.
That's what the character spoke.
Okay, that's how we can see. Okay, now before we get into our roster, I got another quick question. You keep saying you saved all this money, you got all this money to be saved in L.A. I be seeing you on your poker, and you love poker. How are you so good at poker? Is it a learned skill, or is, now mind you, I really don't know much about poker. Sure. The games that I know how to play are spades, face 10, Uno, and
Old Maid,
Go Fish, and that might be it. Now, poker, how have you gotten so good at poker?
So I gotta start this off by saying, you know, as of the last few weeks, actually has been a very bad stretch of poker for me. I gotta keep it honest with you guys. But overall, you know, in my poker career, I suppose I've done fairly well. And having, you know, some upswings and some downswings is a very natural part of the game. Because I will say it's definitely a skill based game, but it does naturally have, you know, elements of like luck and gambling. So of course, there'll be times where luck might be in your favor and you kind of make more money than you really should, or there'll be times where luck is not on your side and you'll do worse than you really deserve to. And so I'm right now in one of those phases when I first got to LA, I played a few tournaments, did quite well. I got first in the first one, second in the second one. I've had another tournament. I've played six tournaments since I've been out here. So I got a first place, second place, and then I had another tournament cash, which means I made the money. And then the three other ones did not make the money. But that's that, a 50% rate for those is actually, you know, very solid. Because I think a lot of times, and they're not obviously the World Series of Poker or anything like that. Not that level necessarily. But to have the success that I had with the tournaments has been very fulfilling. But so there's tournaments and there's also cash games. So tournaments is sort of like you play until the final person remains. And then cash games is like you sit down at the table with whoever, you can go whenever. You can play one hand and leave the table if you want. There's no
so what's your preference, tournaments or hand me the cash?
Usually cash games, but lately I've really been actually enjoying the sort of the new challenge of the tournaments. The tournaments are almost like a battle royale of sorts, you know, where you constantly have to be surviving and there's no way to sort of to hide in a sense, you know. You gotta like push the tempo. It's very fast paced. It pays to be very aggressive in those. So I've liked those, and I don't usually play a lot of tournaments. So that's sort of been a new challenge for me that I've really enjoyed. But I do play a lot of cash games. But yeah, so I just wanted to preface and say, you know, it recently has been going great. So that's I got to be honest. But overall, I've loved poker for a long time. Something my dad and I, it's like our shared hobby almost. That and Survivor, actually.
And Survivor. Yep. Now, when you're playing poker in these tournaments, do you wear the buffs?
No, I don't. I don't wear the buffs. I do usually wear a nice Gorin Bros hat.
Oh.
Maybe a hoodie. Because, you know, I think there's a stereotype about a lot of poker players. You know, like the serious ones, sometimes they'll wear the glasses and the earbud and the headphones and the hoodie. I like when I'm at the table, I like to be able to banter with the other people and really talk to them and like be social, because it's more fun. And I think you can get some information out of people at the table. So I'm not one of those players that is like all like keeps to themselves and listens to like finance podcasts while I'm playing. I like to, you know, I might have a little Jack Harlow going on in one ear.
Not Garrett Edelstein.
Yeah. Well, for Survivor, I mean, Garrett's actually a phenomenal poker. Like, he's probably my favorite poker player just because he plays crazy high stakes. And he's very good. But no, I'm not by any means a super serious poker player, but I really do enjoy it. It's a very good, like, mental.
Now, is it more a numbers game? Is it more like you try your luck? Is it more you like reading out the players? I always hear of like a poker face. Or do you need to be vigilant to see if somebody's like actually like, you know, like they're bluffing, or like what is the 1-2-3 steps to poker?
Yeah, I'd say when it really boils down to it, poker is a very mathematical numbers game. And it's a game of information where, you know, a lot of times people talk about reading other players. And I think the first thing we think about, going into that is like, oh, if his like hands are shaking, it means this. And those are called like live tells, like reading someone based on like their body language or like how they're talking. And that's definitely relevant. But I think the most like the primary way that you read people is sort of through like their actions in the hand, you know, how much are they betting? Things like that. And then also to combine that with like the cards on the table. So it's very mathematical. But the thing is, you never truly know. So you kind of just use math to give it yourself the best guess of what the opponent probably has and what you should do based off of that. And according to that, you can make a move that I guess is like mathematically ideal. But again, it doesn't always work. Sometimes you're going to be wrong. Sometimes you might make the right move and then the wrong card comes on the board and the other player now has a better hand than you, even though you did everything right. And so you're just naturally going to lose. And so it's an intelligence thing in the sense of the math. But there's also always that element of like luck and variance that keeps it exciting where, you know, I could sit down at a table with people that are all worse than me and I might lose sometimes, or I could sit at a table with people that are all better than me and I sometimes might win. And so that's kind of like, I feel like a big difference between poker and chess, for example, kind of a similar mental thing is like chess, the better player is almost always going to win. And so I'm like, if I was playing chess for money, I wouldn't just be playing against people better than me. Like, what's the point? Whereas poker, there's always that chance that you could get some luck and win. So it's really just a combination of, like, you know, straight up math, but also reading people, making moves, testing your luck. And also, you know, sometimes you got to be ballsy and make a big bluff, which is like when you, I guess, bet as though you have a great hand when you really don't, and try to get the other person to fold their hand. So it's just a combination of so many exciting, you know, mental tests, I guess, that it really keeps me engaged. And it's one of those games where you can always, always, always get better. So you can constantly push yourself in it.
Have you ever been like talking around the table and then all of a sudden somebody just like stops talking and it just gets like seriously intense?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'd say whenever you get in a big hand, usually it starts to get quiet. You know, like, oh, if I'm in a big hand, I'm focused on the hand. I'm no longer like bantering with people about, like, you know, how's the food at this restaurant? You know what I mean? Like, because that's when you have to start thinking about things from like a mathematical strategic standpoint. You know, yeah, you don't want to distract yourself because you're trying to calculate like general numbers, things like that. But then as soon as it ends, you know, you can go right back into into conversation.
The most awkwardest thing that has ever happened during a poker game. Have you like ever farted? Have you ever heard like someone fart? Like, has anything like
one
random
thing that comes to mind as far as like pure like embarrassing? When I was in Vegas with my dad, we were playing at the same table, and in Vegas, when you're playing at the tables for poker, for whatever, like slots, blackjack, the drinks are free.
Oh.
And this was, we went for my 21st birthday. So my dad and I ordered a couple beers.
Oh, and come on.
I got a Corona with the lime, as one does, at the table. And you know how the trick where you like put the lime in, turn the bottle upside down to like mix it in?
No, I never heard that. Oh, I mean, so, I put the lime in and I'll put my thumb or finger on it and then I'll turn it upside down, but I don't
That's what I mean. I did that, but I messed it up so that like the pressure got messed up, so it started like squirting. So I got like a quarter of the Corona just like squirted on me, and everyone else at the table started laughing. I was like, oh my god, and my dad started making fun of me. I was like, damn, I'm never doing that again. I'm gonna just drink my Corona.
Jack, what in the hell? Explode on the table.
But
okay. Yeah.
But like I said, the tournaments have been a lot of fun. That feeling of, you know, it was actually back to back tournaments for me where I got first place and then second place out of a field of like 70 players. So that was such a good feeling. It's almost that same feeling as like, you know, in Survivor, in the circle, when you get to the final. When you survive the round, you know, when you guys win that immunity challenge, you're like, okay, I'm going from the final 18 to the final 17. Like in the poker, when someone else gets knocked out, it's like I'm one step closer to making some money. It's a cool feeling, and it combines that strategy too. I think there's probably a lot of overlap between, you know, the reason poker, people enjoy Survivor, and the reason people like poker. So
no, I could definitely see the crossover, because I know there are a lot of great poker players like Boston Rob, Jeremy Collins, Tyson, and I know I feel like I'm missing someone big that always plays, like Dom from Goose Island. I know that they're like huge.
I remember you all did that poker tournament too before South Africa.
We definitely did, and we should. Tony came in hot. I put like $200 down and just lost. And I was like,
but it is funny at the same time. The actual, like, the professional poker players that have played Survivor almost always do pretty bad. Like Garrett, Jean Robert, Ronnie Barda, who was the first boot of Idols. And obviously they're phenomenal poker players, so they clearly have a good sense of like strategy, things like that. But for some reason it doesn't translate to the Survivor game,
and
which is kind of interesting.
You know what I think that is? I think because, and it reminds me of Garrett. Do you remember when like it was the night that Garrett went home when it was supposed to be Jatia, and poker is very practical. Like, you know, it's a number game. It's like, you're not you can like, it's not a lot of moving parts in the sense of like people aren't getting up from the table with their cards and stuff. And so it's crazy that you're saying that, because it makes me think of Garrett when they got back from the challenge and Garrett basically was like, well, it's no need for us to scramble. We know like what happened, and let's all stay here and talk. And like, Jatia's going home. And from a practical sense, it's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But also it's survivors, so it's not as, we're all just sitting at a table talking and like, you know, our fate's going to be decided. So that's kind of crazy that you just said that, because I just made that connection. Do you remember that episode? Do you know what I'm talking about?
With, absolutely. Yeah. And I think something too, for me, in my, you know, survivor sort of mini experiences, I think a lot of the strategy that I think about in Survivor is similar to poker, where I sort of try to think of like a game theory approach, where it's like, if everyone else is doing their best move, then this would be my best move, which is sort of a logic that works really well at the poker table, because you would assume that most people are like, especially at the upper levels, are going to be playing like a strategy that's good for them, and you can kind of act accordingly. Whereas in Survivor, something I've noticed, and I think this applies exactly to, you know, Garrett's tribe, where not everyone is going to be doing their best move. You know, for Jatia, dumping out the rice, probably not her best strategy. But Garrett didn't account for that fact that not everyone is necessarily thinking of like their best move. And so if you try to do that, just like at the poker table, if you're playing against someone who's super reckless and you're not accounting for that, then you're going to get a bad read on their strategy and kind of play incorrectly. So, I think that's maybe where a lot of the poker players go wrong, is they try to strategize it like based right, like straight up off the numbers, when in reality, like, you're dealing with people that are not always the most logical.
Right. And it's like, you have to play a numbers game. It's always a numbers game, but also you have to take into consideration, right, emotions, other people's strategies, idols, alliances. So yeah, no, that, that's a, come on, us breaking this down like that.
Oh yeah.
I love that. Thank you for Poker 101 with the Jack Atkins. Don't stir the Corona with the lime, because it'll explode.
Keep it simple.
But yeah, we have a full roster for you guys. There were some things that are going on in the sports realm, and I am so excited to talk to you about. One of the things I wanted to just start our chat off with is the 2022 rookies. And you and I have talked about this, because y'all know, ever since 2 years ago when LaMelo was a draft, I was like so into it. And then that's when I also really discovered, I never really got when people had like career players, like people like, I've been following LeBron since he got in the draft. Like, you know, I was like, oh, okay, well, like, I never got that, but I definitely have that excitement with, you know, y'all know I love LaMelo Ball. That's my guy. And I think the Hornets are going to do really well this year. And I just love the fact that I can say that I've been following, I mean, mind you, this going on his third year, but I can say I've been following him religiously throughout his career. And I don't watch all of the games or don't really know a lot of the team's statistics, but I do keep up to date on the Hornets, and it's just because of my love of LaMelo Ball. So I was excited when the 2022 draft came out, and I definitely had some favorite picks. Now, I don't maybe go by what most people always go by. For me, it has to be the team that you go for, your height, what school you coming from, and you got to at least be like a 5.5 or up on the Zaddy radar.
Yeah. At least Zaddy adjacent.
Yeah, at least Zaddy adjacent. Yeah.
Zadjacent.
So just a couple of the people that I have an eye out for is, one of the people I love is Jalen Williams. He is with the Oklahoma Thunders, and he played basketball in Arkansas for the Razorbacks. I'm probably saying that wrong. And one of the reasons why we like Jalen is because he is 6'9". Okay.
Whew. Okay.
That's, you know, good one. Another one that I really have been liking is Dyson Daniels. He got drafted to the New Orleans Pelicans, and he was the 8th draft pick. I don't know exactly where he went to school.
He played in the G League.
The G League
program, I think. So I don't think he was in college.
Okay.
But
I believe this was his second, or no, actually, this was, he only played in the G League for 1 year, I believe, and you can play in the G League for up to 2 years. And so he got drafted to the New Orleans Pelicans. He's 6'6". We like him. I also really like Marjon, and I can't even begin to pronounce his name, Boshakamp. Marjon. Yeah, he's with the Milwaukee Bucks, and he played college in Yerankee Valley. He's 6'6", 21 years old. So I like him. And my favorite. Also, when I saw this one, I really like Wendell Moore, not to be confused with Wendell Holland, 6'5". He's going for the Minnesota Timberwolves. He played for Duke. I really like Duke because I feel like Duke and Villanova, they tend to play a lot in the championships or the finals. Is that right?
Yeah, they both have really strong programs.
Right. So I remember watching him when he was playing Villanova. So I like had my eye on Wendell. I also like Max Christie. I believe he is he's for the Lakers, but I believe he went to Michigan State. He's 6'4". He's 19. He's a little of a littler guy, but we like him. But my favorite. Not my favorite. Also, I have Bryce Alexander McGowan's. He is for the Charlotte Hornets. And I only really, I like him for two reasons. One, because his name is Bryce, even though he spells it with a Y. But I also like him because LaMelo seemed to have a really good relationship with him and kind of like was a big brother to him and was really excited when he came over to the Hornets. Now, hopefully the G League has concluded, since we're talking about the G League real quick, and just want it to be noted that the Trailblazers won in the G League. And this was Jello, LaMelo's Ball's brother's second year in the G League. So this is, he's done. I don't know when they pick people or when he get picked, but I really just hope for Jello's sake that he can make it into the NBA. I really want all three Ball brothers to be in the NBA. I really like Kendall Thomas Brown. He got drafted to the NBA Pacers. He played basketball for the Baylor Bears. What does this mean? He was a consecutive five-star recruit. And
consecutive?
Okay, maybe consensus.
But a five-star recruit is basically like the highest levels of recruit.
Okay. Well, we like Kendall. He's 6'8", and he definitely ranks a 10 out of 10 on the Zaddy calendar. Also, we have Tyrese Jefferson. He's going to the Atlanta Hawks. I love Tyrese. He's 6'6", and which, mind you, Tyrese is a Zaddy. And I recently found out when he got drafted, he's from Allentown, PA. So that's like Philly adjacent. And then do you know who the number one pick in the draft was this year?
Yes, sir. Paolo Banchero, I believe it's pronounced.
That's my guy. And he is playing for the Orlando Magic. I just like Orlando because I always think of when Michael
Hearts
Jordan
of reality. Played.
How well, man, Hearts of Reality.
You think Paolo's going to pull up?
I think he might. We might have to get Omar to see if we get him to pull up. But definitely the number one draft pick. And I definitely have Orlando. I have Milwaukee. And the Hornets are the teams that I'm going with this year. And then, of course, we have Sharif O'Neal, and we had Scottie Pippen Jr. going to the Lakers. I love a Scottie Pippen, and I love Sharif. Of course, I just love Sharif from, clearly he's Shaq's son, but my special connection with Sharif is that I watched Basketball Wives, and his wife, his mom, Shawnee O'Neal, was on there, and then when Sharif had to have open heart surgery 3 years ago, that's when I really was like, oh, wow, this is kind of sort of crazy. So that's my connection with Sharif. Now,
definitely.
Tell the posse who your one pick is and why it is your one pick. And when you told
us one pick,
well, only because okay, you get three.
But I had four that I had ready.
Who's the one? What's the one one?
Oh, the one. I mean, it's got to be my boy from Gonzaga on the Oklahoma City Thunder, the number two pick in the draft, Chet Holmgren. And a lot of people say he looks like me, so gotta be a Zaddy.
That's definitely not the case. But when y'all listen to this podcast, please pause this now and go look up, what's his name, Jack?
Chet Holmgren. C H E T H O L M G-R-E-N.
And you are going to scream because when Jack called me, he was like, who's your picks? I'm like, well, listen, you know, I got them ready. This was like a month ago. And when you told me it was Chet, you're like, because I kind of sort of think he looks like me. And when I Google, I lost it. Like, he really do look like Chet.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he doesn't look like me at all.
No, he really looks like you.
He looks more like me when, like, you know, when I was at like around more his age, I guess, like when I was 18, 19. Now that I have longer hair, it's a little different. But I mean, we definitely there's some similarities there. And I've had people like send me his picture and be like, I thought this was you. Like when I saw this post.
You got drafted. You didn't tell nobody.
And the funny thing is, too, I used to hoop a little bit in high school.
Oh,
and it goes without saying that obviously Chet 20 times better than me. But the way he like plays and moves is very similar to how I played, but just like a way better version, if that makes sense. Like when his lanky ass is running around the court, you know, from a side angle, I'm like, am I watching myself? And then he'll like dunk it. I'm like, never mind, that's couldn't be me. But
were you a 1 or 2 star consensus when you played?
I think I was a no star, but I did have a couple offers, Bryce. So,
oh, okay.
You know, maybe I was a quarter star. But I mean, I wanted to talk. You know, Chet, I was very pleasantly surprised by his performance in the summer league. He, you know, a lot of people were worried about his weight because he's like 7 feet tall and I think he weighs less than I do. So he's a pretty skinny guy. So, you know, obviously he's got to bulk up, but I think that'll come. But, you know, people were worried he's going to get pushed around a little bit, things like that. But he played really, really well in the summer league, 14 points a game, 8.5 rebounds a game. 3 assists, 2 steals, and 3 blocks a game, which 3 blocks is crazy. So clearly he was hanging in there with some of the bigger guys that he was going against. So I'm very excited to see how he does.
Who's next on your list? And mind you, you're 7 foot tall. You better be blocking.
Yeah. But, and I want to say too, I'm really, obviously Chet's my guy, but the Thunder have a really exciting young squad. They got, you know, Chet, they got Josh Giddey, who, Bryce, dare I say, I think you might think he's a zaddy Australian.
Let me Google him right now. Josh.
And then they also got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who very talented player. Also probably a zaddy in the eyes of Bryce Isaiah. So okay. Just a young trio of zaddies with a lot of skill.
Oh, okay. I mean, Josh might be zaddy adjacent, but I'm sure if I saw him in person. And who was the other person you said?
Shai, S-H-A-I, Gilgeous, G-I-L-G, and then it should pop up. He's also known to be one of the more stylish players in the NBA.
Let's see. Is he on... Wait. Because they're saying 2K21, but that couldn't be him. S-H-I...
Well, he's not a rookie.
Okay.
But he's a younger player.
Okay.
The Thunder have a really talented young group of players, so it should be cool to see how my guy Chet blends with that group. Another guy I really like was, I believe, the number 5 pick on the Detroit Pistons, Jaden Ivey.
Oh.
He was a beast. He played for Purdue. Just an absolute beast. Gets a lot of comparisons to Ja Morant, who's one of the best young guards in the NBA. He's just a really dynamic, exciting player. Super athletic, fast-paced style of play. So him and Jalen Duren from Memphis, both rookies on the Pistons, I think will be exciting to watch, along with Cade Cunningham, who was the number 1 pick in the last draft.
Oh, wow.
Then 2 other guys I like, Tari Eason, number 17 pick on the Houston Rockets. Really played well in the summer league, 17 points a game, 12 rebounds a game, shot the 3 well, played good defense. And I you know, my dad being from Houston, I got some love for the Rockets. I just want to say they got a really exciting young group as well. Jabari Smith, who is the number 3 pick in this year's draft, really talented player. And then, I mean, Josh Christopher, Jalen Green, Alperen Sengun, Kevin Porter Jr., Christian Wood, bunch of guys under the age of like 24. Should be exciting as a somewhat of a Rockets fan to watch. So that's a good group. And then I want to say my last pick was he went undrafted, but got signed to the Memphis Grizzlies. Kenneth Lofton Jr. Huge. Like, he's just a big body. I think he's got to be like 6'8", 6'9", probably about 300 pounds.
Oh, wow.
But he's
a bigger guy. Yeah.
Yeah. He looks like, you know, kind of a tank, but super agile, can shoot the three, pass the ball, plays good defense. And what it was, he didn't even get drafted. He got signed after the draft. In this summer league, 14 points a game, 5 rebounds a game.
So let me ask you this.
He's a really fun player to watch.
It's interesting that, like, Kenneth Lofton, like, we don't see normally bigger players like this in the the NBA. The person that I think of immediately is, like, a Shaq. Like, do you think he has the potential to have, like, to be the next possible Shaq? Because he is a, he's not a big guy, but he's a, like husky type of guy. Not what you would normally see in the NBA.
You know, Shaq is just such a, like, Shaq's what, like 7'3"? Kenneth is a little smaller, so I don't think he's as much of a post player. But as, I mean, as far as his stature goes, but he's a really good passer, playmaker, can shoot the three, which Shaq really couldn't shoot very well. A lot of people are comparing him to, I don't know if you know who Zach Randolph is, former NBA All-Star, who just like a bigger guy, huskier guy who could score, play good defense. Yeah, Kenneth Lofton Jr. is kind of like that, but also just craftier with the ball handling, with the shooting, with the passing. So the fact that he went undrafted out of Louisiana Tech, he's just a really exciting player. And like you said, not a lot of people in the league are sort of built like he is or play like he does. So it's just kind of a fun guy to follow.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm actually going to add him to my list a little bit because I like that. I like when people don't fit the regular mold and, you know, listening to you hype him up, he is great. And so those are our rookie picks. So we would love to hear who you guys got. I know Josh Green, a member of the Posse, is always telling me his favorite pick. So definitely let us know on the Twitter or Instagram. Now, the next thing that I kind of sort of want to move to is that I loved you talking about how a lot of these teams are building, like they're getting these younger players and they're building all these, the teams around them, because just like the Sixers always say, you have to trust the process and it's not just a one season done. It's really like a relationship, a bond. And so it's really interesting that I've seen a lot in the news with Kyrie Irving and KD. Now, we know KD and Steph Curry were together. They won the 2017 and 2018 champions in Golden State. And we know that Kyrie was recently sent to the Nets, and Kyrie and KD were together. They were supposed to do, like, this supposed to be this powerhouse. The Nets was supposed to take it to the house, and my Trick Daddy voice, but I know you don't know that song, Jack. Take it to the house, take it to the house. Yeah, we know you don't know that, but it's okay.
Sure,
It got the, you know, Trina on it. I can do the rap if you want, but no. But we know that KD is prone to a lot of injuries, and Kyrie, we know that he didn't play a lot of games with the Nets due to the COVID restrictions and to some of his personal personal things going on. They didn't make the playoffs. They got chopped in the play-ins. And so Kyrie came out and basically said he wanted to leave the Nets. But then he was like, I'm going to stay. And then KD recently came out and was like, I want to leave the Nets. And after KD said that he wanted to leave the Nets, Kyrie was like, all right, I want to leave the Nets as well. But these guys are pretty veteran players, and they don't come cheap. They are relatively expensive players in my, you know, what I know of things. And so no one is really biting, and the draft has already happened. And now, like, you know, so I'm just, what do you make of this? Because I don't know a lot about the sports like that, but I just know that y'all was supposed to be this powerhouse. Y'all didn't. Then Kyrie, you saying you was going to stay. Now, because KD say he going, now you want to be out too. Like, what do you make of this mess?
No, it's definitely a fiasco. Like when the Nets sort of first brought all these guys together, some of the great, you know, all-time NBA talents, like you said, KD, Kyrie, they had James Harden for a hot minute. Everyone thought, oh, they're going to wipe the floor with everybody. Didn't happen like that. I think in hindsight, not necessarily a shock given the fact that I guess that trio of like KD, Kyrie, and Harden is sort of their play styles and personalities. I don't know if they don't necessarily mesh, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Kyrie, obviously, you know, I love Kyrie, but he definitely has some off the court issues as far as like, I mean, I'm not an inside source for this, but you know, as far as his attitude goes, obviously he's entitled to his opinion on the whole COVID thing, but if you're not contributing on the court because you're not playing because of the COVID restrictions, that's not really helpful. I think he's a flat earther too, which I don't want to knock anyone's beliefs, but like he's a little out there.
Okay.
And KD too, you know, great player, but for me, KD's always been, you know, he's bounced around from, he just bounces from like good team to good team. And so he's not necessarily like, I feel like a natural leader necessarily. But yeah, it didn't come as a surprise to me after this disappointing season that they wanted to sort of break things up. And it looked like it was going to happen for a while, but then, you know, from you know, NBA rumors and stuff, at least for KD, the Nets wanted an arm and a leg for KD. And it's like the fact of the matter is KD's 33 years old, still obviously one of the top players in the NBA. But like you said, he's had some injury issues. You know, I saw their ask. I believe there was a leaked trade offer to the Minnesota Timberwolves where they basically asked for like their three best young players and like four first round picks, which is just ridiculous. And so if that's what the price for the Nets to trade KD, it's like, okay, no team is really going to bite at this. Because if KD's 33 years old, he's obviously a great player, but you can't give away your whole future for a player who's probably going to retire in, you know, 4 or 5 years. You know what I mean? So
right.
For me, and I think the same can sort of be said for Kyrie. I think there's a few. Kyrie's such an eccentric personality. I feel like you kind of have to pair him with the right group of players. And I thought Kyrie to the Lakers made a lot of sense. But again, there wasn't necessarily a lot of pieces that the Lakers can move to the Nets that it would really make sense. So I think where it's at right now, I know there's a lot of people, teams looking for, you know, three team trades, four teams trades where, you know, for those not familiar, if you're trying to make a trade with one team, but there's not necessarily a swapping of assets that makes sense, sometimes you can involve some other teams as sort of like a middleman who might value, you know, certain things that the other team doesn't value, but then they might be able to trade something else to that other team that makes it worthwhile for all three teams, I guess.
So it's like a three-way team. Like, it's like, okay, we'll exactly. give you this person, but then you could take that person, but then that team would take that person. And exactly. Oh, wow.
And so I think that I'm sure those are kind of in the works, whether it's for KD or for Kyrie. Again, I think the Nets have such a high price for some of for those guys that it might not work out, but I could see something finally falling into place that moves one of those players. I think maybe a more likely scenario is that, you know, once I think the NBA season gets underway, obviously the Nets still have a super loaded roster. Ben Simmons, who's had trouble on the court, off the court, but still a very talented player. Kyrie, KD, LaMarcus Aldridge, a lot of strong players. You know, I don't think it's a bad move for them to try to regroup, get everyone on the same page and go at the season. If they could start clicking and playing well,
right.
They'd be one of the top teams in the league. And we saw that last year, the games that Kyrie and KD did play together, the Nets did very well. So, I think they give it a shot. And then, you know, as the trade deadline rolls around, which is usually about 2/3 of the way through the season, if they're kind of having the same, you know, failure, the lack of success as last season, then maybe as the trade deadline approaches, they could flip KD or Kyrie to a team that's really a team that's performing well, really needs that last piece to contend for the championship. And maybe then they could get a better price. That's kind of where I think it's at. But
so
that's my two cents.
Okay. Well, listen, we appreciate it because it's more than my 1 cent. Now, somebody who used to be in this mix was James Harden. Now, we know that James Harden went to the Philadelphia Sixers. However, Philadelphia wasn't too happy with James Harden and how he played. He did all right, but he didn't do what we wanted him to do necessarily. And then I got news that the former league NBA or MVP has rejected the option, his player option worth $47.4 million for the next season. And he's done this in order to help the franchise better position itself to make a run at a championship. Essentially, James is taking less money in hopes that Philly can do more by foregoing the money and opting out of his options to allow the 76ers president to have more flexibility in the roster moves ahead of the season. Now, I think this is something like very admirable, especially yeah. coming from a seasoned player like James Harden, who what realistically has 2-3 more seasons left in, like, who knows, but like is a more seasoned player. He ain't like Jalen Williams or LaMelo Ball that has like yeah. decades in front of them. Now, But my motive, like, I would feel that, like, if you're an NBA player, you want to get as much money, like anybody that's working a job, you want to get the most money that you can. What do you think of this move of him taking less to be able to build Philly up? Do you think because Philly has such a hard rep with their players, i.e. Ben Simmons, and you see how that relationship went, do you think this is an effort of James Harden to kind of like build respect and love for Philly? Or do you think it's a way for him just to secure another year on another team and still making $30 million?
No, I think if I'm a Philly fan, I'm very excited by this. It's generally, I'd say, a selfless move. Where James Harden is essentially saying, hey, like, I want to contend to win a championship. I think Philly is the place to do that. And to make that more of a viable option, I'm going to take less money so we can get some more talent and keep the guys around us that we need, like a Joel Embiid, maybe give him more money to stick around once his contract is up. I'm sure they'll restructure the deal in some way that will get him some bread. I also heard Bryce loosely, just from some, just the internet in general, I guess, okay, is that there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff with, I think the Sixers. I believe, I don't know the specifics, but I believe one of their former owners, I think, is one of the owners of Fanatic Sports, I think it's called, like the sports apparel company. And I believe that they've, don't quote me on this, but I think I saw something about them signing Harden to a deal. And so what can essentially happen there, and I think might be happening behind the scenes, which I think is perfectly legal as far as the NBA goes, because the owner is no longer affiliated, but they can pay James Harden more through that outside brand contract in order to make him take less money from the team contract and then open. So Harden might be getting the same amount of money, but just getting more money from his brand deals and less money from the team.
And so then I ask the question, so is this a publicity stunt move a little bit to make like the fans buy into more Harden? Because essentially you're just getting money on the back end. You're not really losing money. And it just like buys you grace with us Philly fans.
Yeah. I mean, I think in that case, if that's the full story and that's the truth, then I think it's a no brainer for Harden. I mean, it could be two things at once, you know, like, He might want to gain some favor from the organization and the fans, but at the same time, it's like he wants to win. So if that's a way he could get the same money, but also make the team better, like, why not? And that's not necessarily selfish. It's just like, it makes sense. And I think in his mind, you know, he's also, you know, he's still got some years left in him, but he's certainly on the tail end of his career.
Right.
And for him, he's probably like, hey, Philly might be the last place that I can go and really be the guy to make it happen. You know, if he and Joel win a chip, obviously Embiid's a great player, but everyone would be like, okay, this was like, you know, Harden and Embiid's team. Like, they're a duo. They're both studs. You know, if Harden burns of these next few years in Philly, he'll have been on four teams, not had a championship. And then by then he's going to be like, what, 34, 35. He might be a starter on another team, but he's not going to be the guy. So it's for his legacy and his success, you know, you want your team, like, now's the time. So especially if that, you know, the behind the scenes scenario that I mentioned is really the truth, I think it's a no brainer. But at the end of the day, it's like, that's not bad by him by any means. Like, if you can get the same bag and make your team better, like, why
not? No, I mean, and I'm mad at that. I guess you're right. But I guess the way the headlines for me was like, oh, okay, he really wants to take a pay cut to see the team win. But also, you get in the back end deals. But speaking of, now let's switch fields. No baseball. What you know about baseball? And also, why ain't nobody tell me about Juan Soto? Okay, 23 years old in his fifth season with the Washington Nationals. Okay, out here. Now, I don't know what this means. 0.292 hitters with 117 home runs in 553 games. Now, Juan is the talk of the town out in the NFL. Wait, no. MLB. Don't say that. No, wait. NFL, no, that's the National Association. No. What is... Hold on, wait. We're going to work this through. Baseball is not the NBA, not the NFL. What's the baseball league's acronym?
MLB.
MLB. Okay. Mind you, I thought that, but for me, I think of MJB. Do you know what MJB stands for, Jack?
No.
Mary J. Blige. Jesus. Please do not hurt my heart. Please say you know who Mary J. Blige is.
I'm familiar, yeah.
Just name a song.
MLB.
Now, she does have a song called MLB on her album, The Breakthrough, but you know.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah, she does. She has a song called MLB because it's just Mary J. Blige, but she does have a song called MLB on the Breakthrough album. But, I mean, it's like a album filler, not necessarily like a hit song. But listen, we're going to let you slide. But listen, back to Juan Soto. He is the talk of the town over there in the Washington Nationals. Now, and he, first of all, 5 seasons and you only 23? Well, word on the block is that he turned down Washington was like, listen, we need you to stay here. They offered this man, hold on. 10-9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1. Listen, I don't even know what Juan look like, but listen, seeing this number, Juan is a zaddy. They offered this man $440 million over 15 years. That works out to be $29.3 million per season. And this past Saturday, Juan said no. They recently, prior to that, they had offered him like $300 million for 15 years, and he declined that. Then they came back with this $440 million, and he declined it. Mm-hmm. Have you heard about Juan Soto, the outfielder from Washington?
Yeah. I'm not a big baseball fan, but I do follow. So I definitely am familiar with Juan Soto, one of the best younger players in the league. I also heard a bit about this deal that you were talking about. The contracts in baseball are ridiculous because there's essentially no salary cap like there is in the NFL or the NBA. So those players making, half a bill over their career.
Right. And if Juan would have signed this deal with the Nationals, this would have been the largest MLB. Did I say that right?
Yep.
Largest contract in its history of baseball. So Juan gotta be good. And it's just crazy. He's young. But, and again, I don't know much about baseball, but 15 years sound like a long time.
It is. Definitely. And I think with baseball, though, it's like you could play till you're a little bit older a lot of the times because baseball doesn't wear on your body as much as, football or basketball. I don't know like the ins and outs of like the baseball stuff. I would expect that, for Juan Soto, he's sort of, there's just got to be something where Washington's not the place he wants to be, I guess. Whether that's an organization thing, whether that's them, like him wanting to go to a team that's generally a little bit more competitive. Maybe he thinks he could get more money elsewhere, but it's like, I don't know. You sign a contract for $440 million guaranteed. It doesn't really matter.
Y'all got me. If Juan don't want it.
Yeah. It's kind of a surprise because I feel like, that your organization that sort of builds you up from a young man in Juan Soto's case, where he's been playing with them since, he was 18, even before that. I'm surprised. I'd feel like I'd have some sort of natural loyalty, especially when they offer me a half a bill bag. But maybe he just doesn't want to live in Washington, or maybe it's just there's some conflict in the organization that he just wants to test the market and go somewhere else, which you can't blame him for. If he thinks he could get more money or he thinks there's a better fit for him as a player, it is what it is. But it's like, I don't know, if someone offered me $440 million, I feel like I'd have a hard time saying
there.
But again, at the same time, if he doesn't love the organization, it's almost like the opposite of with the James Harden thing where, maybe another organization offers him $350 million for 15 years, but he just thinks it's gonna be a better quality of life. It's like, at the end of the day, if you have $350 million, the 90 million, obviously insane amount, but it's like you already got $350. It's not going to change how you're living that much.
Right. And I'm sure that you can make that other $90 million up in endorsement deals or something. But for me, I guess the bigger story for me is, like you said, you've been with this organization since you're 18. You've been here for 5 seasons. For me, I feel like there has to be something more internally going, something that is like he does not like, or something that like he just does not want to stay with them because I don't know, the contracts don't get that much bigger. So that was just something that I was just like, no, wait a minute now, Purple Pants Posse, if y'all know something about this, Soto deal in Washington, please spill the tea because I am intrigued. Another thing that I put on the roster was, have you heard of this Drew League before, Jack?
Yeah, I've heard a lot about the Drew League. I always see a lot of highlights and stuff from it. I realized the other day that it's in LA, so I think it's sort of just wrapped up, but it would have been cool to go check that out. But
is
super
cool, yeah. Is the Drew League like the G League and the Summer League, where actual like players that want to still have a competitive edge can compete in this league, and you get to play with like NBA players and some overseas? Like, what do you know what the actual purpose of the Drew League is?
It's kind of like what I think it's for charity, and so it's. I believe from my brief research, it's for charity. And so they get a bunch of, you know, exciting players, whether that's NBA players, overseas players, some younger guys, just to give people some good games to watch, make money for charity. And then obviously it's a very high level of competition. So, you know, when you got, like you said, LeBron is playing in there, I think pretty much anyone's going to go want to play. And it's a way for players, you know, NBA players to stay sharp over the summer. It's for a good cause. And at this point, as even for like the culture, it's something that basketball fans and sports enthusiasts follow too. So it's just, it's that kind of, as far as sports go in the summer, it can be sort of at the center of the culture, the basketball culture too. So I'm sure it's, for a lot of players, it's just a cool thing to be a part of too.
Yeah, no, and definitely LeBron played in the Drew League this year. He hasn't played since 2011, since the lockout. And they basically said Bron came to play. He was shutting it down and was literally killing it, in which we expect nothing else from LeBron. I'm really excited to see if LeBron's dream does come true, where he says, well, you know, his oldest son, Bronny, like he wants to, like his last season, he wants to play on the team with his son. And I think that that would be like so dope.
I think it'll happen. Yeah,
I'm sure LeBron can make it happen. But for me, I just love it as a basketball player. I really love like the family franchises, and just to see like a black father with his black son. Like, I don't know. I just like the optics of that for me in my head look are just so amazing. So I'm excited. Huge fan of LeBron. But, you know, I still love LaMelo Ball. Now, the last thing on the roster,
maybe the Hornets draft Bronny.
Now listen.
Angelo and Lonzo.
Listen, I'm getting all five jerseys. And also, another little Melo update. You know, Melo wears the number 3, like with all of his brothers, they always did. But Melo wanted the number 1 because he played with that when he was overseas, and that was his favorite number. But last year was this big thing where I guess he missed the opportunity to submit for a number change. And so he was like really mad and protesting about that, but then he got over it. So I am curious to see whether or not this year Melo has submitted the paperwork in time to get the one that changed his jersey from a 3 to a 1. And if that does happen, Jack, if you need birthday, if you need Christmas, and if you need Hanukkah, and if you need Ken Sierra ideas for me, you can get me the
Hornets. How many LaMelo jerseys do you have already?
I have 2. I have like a fake one. One that I just like really wear around. Then I actually have like the real jersey. And I have 2 pairs of the Melos.
Oh, yeah. I remember when you got those.
Yeah. Shout out to LaMelo for my birthday gift. But mind you, my issue with the Melos is they're like, I don't want to wear them. I literally have them up in my room as like trophies, but that's why I'm going to get a 3rd pair of that. I'm actually going to wear them when I be in here breaking people's ankles on the court. Cause that's what I do. Now,
I can do a jersey swap. You can give me a Chet Holmgren jersey.
Oh yeah. Like, don't say that. Don't say that, Jack. Cause I actually will get you that for Christmas.
I might have to do the same.
The last topic is like one, it's been a sensitive topic, but it's something that I wanted to bring to the Purple Pants podcast. And I wanted to like, you know, curious to hear your thoughts on it. The University of Pennsylvania nominated swimmer Leah Thomas, who has become the face of the debate of trans women in sports, for the 2002 NCAA Women
2022.
Yeah, what did I say? 2002?
You said 2002. I don't know if they would have done that in 2002.
Yeah, I'm definitely not. But for 2022 NCAA Woman of the Year, the Ivy League swimmer was nominated as a Division I athlete for swimming and diving. According to the NCAA website, the award is meant to honor academic achievements, athletic excellence, community service, leadership for graduating female college athletes for all three division. In March, Leah became the first transgendered athlete to win the NCAA Division Title I after finishing first in the women's 500-yard freestyle event and recording the fastest time ever of the NCAA season. With that victory, she became the first transgender athlete to win a D1 title in any sport. And with that came this huge debate in which, they felt like Leah should not be competing with cisgendered females. And it's, first of all, congratulations to Leah, because I think that she deserves this award. And I am an ally to my transgender sisters and to the transgender community. And I was having this conversation at a family event. This topic came up. I don't know how it came up. And put me in an awkward position, because I felt like I was the only queer person at this family event, and people were talking about the topic, and there were people supporting Leah, there were people that had opposite views, and again, you can have your own view, but it really the conversation turned to me for the answer, and it just made me feel uncomfortable, because I feel like I understand both sides of what people are saying about this. I understand cisgendered women that feel a ways about a transgender woman. And I also feel very compelled that, a trans woman is a woman. But I also understand that the difference between a trans woman and a cis woman. And so it's this complex ideology, and it's this it's not complex, but it is, because for me, my family was it seems like you're lying in the middle, Bryce, and I'm like, well, yeah, I am, but also I was trying to make it's very complicated, and I was trying to make my family understand that why I don't want to say that I agree with the cisgender women. And also, I'm a feminist and I'm with women and I'm with women's rights and all of that. So don't get that confused. But what I was saying was that the people that have such a strong feeling about this, and when they use those terms, I was trying to explain to them how it makes me uncomfortable, because I feel like it's rooted in transphobia. Now, hear me clearly. I am not saying that someone that disagrees with Leah in this field is transphobic. I am saying that a lot of the ideology, when they bring up these points, are rooted in transphobia, and it makes me uncomfortable. And I also realize, me as a person with a platform and something that people look up to, is that I don't ever want to be in a position where I say something that negatively affects the trans community. And again, because I realize and understand the population that the trans community is. And again, I say this a thousand times. I'm going to always say and the most affected population are our Black trans women that are killed and that no one talks about. And so it's even in these topics that people don't think have ramifications, but it does. And so I was talking to one of my trans friends actually about this, because I'm like, you know what? It's hard for me to say, because again, I understand both sides of it. I understand both sides of it. And so one of my trans friends that I reached out to, because I was saying I was for the idea of maybe making a trans sports athletic league. I think that that would be something great for the trans community. It would bring more awareness, highlight. And I thought it would be something positive. But my one trans friend was but it also then again separates and isolates. And they were that doesn't do well for the cause. And my one trans friend gave me a great point. And she was saying that they don't even really understand why we have men's and women's basketball teams. Like, why not just the best players at the highest level play against each other? And I never thought about it like that. And I was like, wow, that is a really good point. I'm just saying, like, and then again, my other family members was like, well, men are better. But are they? Like, I mean, I'm sure if we searched the world and found the top players of the top players, but again, that's just what our society is. We have these leagues. But ultimately, when I was talking to my trans friend, and I guess a lot of one of the things that, like, she was dispelling, and I clearly dispelled, that, like, that when people say, like, oh, these trans women shouldn't be able to play in the field, like, and some of the things are like people will specifically transition just to play a sport. Like, nobody's transitioning to play a sport. Okay. Like, let's just get out of my face with that and stop playing with me with that. And so another thing is that, like, all of a sudden the field will be dominated with all of the top players are going to be trans women. That's also not the case. But another thing that she had made me aware of was, like, it's less about the professional level. And what she was more concerned about was the ramification of our trans children that want to play on a baseball team in school or want to play in a football team in school. And, like, what type of ramifications that will send down to them. And especially in the time that all of these states are passing these anti-trans bills and so much is going on and how much it would affect them. And I never stopped to think about that, how it would affect our trans youth. And here we are talking about on this pro athlete level and, you know, how it trickles down to the children. What are your thoughts? Because it's a complicated,
I've thought about it. I thought about it when the whole Leah Thomas situation was more sort of in the news. I thought about it today when you sort of gave me some of the topics, and I've thought about it while you've been talking about it. And it's so nuanced, because obviously as an ally to the trans community, you want trans athletes, trans children to feel comfortable and be able to compete. Like, everyone deserves to be able to compete in the sport that they love. But at the same time, it's like, if I'm the female born swimmer cisgendered female born swimmer that is competing against Leah in the finals, and I've been training, you know, super hard to win, and now all of a sudden I'm going against someone who does have a genetic sort of advantage, you know, for all the other cisgendered female born athletes, I do think there is sort of a level to unfairness. And so, as far as Leah goes, I don't think Leah's doing anything wrong. Leah has transitioned into the person they feel most comfortable as. They obviously want to continue to compete in the sport that they love. So the fact that there's been so much press and so much controversy around that, I just feel bad for them. But then at the same time, it's like, yeah, if you're the cisgendered girls that are competing against her, at the same time, that's not very fair either. So like you said, it's just such a gray area where it's like, you don't want to restrict transgender athletes from competing, but at the same time, you want to make sure that there's sort of a even level of competitiveness available, which is hard to accomplish when a lot of times transgender females will have that natural, not all the time, but sometimes that natural sort of genetic advantage. Like, you know, yeah, I think,
yeah, no,
I see both sides of the argument.
I don't know. And again, like you said, it's so nuanced. And again, I was saying this at, like, my family event, and, you know, one of my ignorant family members was just like, because it's all new, non-binary and trans. And I, like, had to politely say, like, baby, this is not new. Like, trans and non-binary people have been around since the beginning of time. Like, you know, like, we are now, we have the verbiage and we have the wherewithal and we have the knowledge, and they have the rights, and they are using their voice to speak up and, you know, creating these platforms and things and correct terminology to use. But They've always been here. So stop saying that, because it's just like that. And again, that also makes me so defensive, and which is why, like, I am an ally to my females and I'm an ally to my trans. But at the same time, I was trying to just get people to understand that at times the rhetoric and the points and the talking points that people use to discredit Leah are very, like, transphobic. And I'm not saying that people that use them or believe that are, but...
No, I agree, because some people are so vehement about, like, villainizing Leah herself. And it's like, she didn't do anything wrong, you know? It's just an unfair situation that she's been put in. So to me, the conversation shouldn't be about her. It should just be about, how do we make this a fair playing field for everybody who's involved?
And that's how I feel. And, you know, one of my cousins who agree with me, they were saying, like, how they felt like, not similar at all, but felt very, how the topic was approached and their point of view was like, it was almost like the integration of sports. And how, you know, people feared black athletes. They, like my cousin was saying, it was the same conversation, that they felt like the black athlete was so much more genetically dominating than the other. And that was outside of the racist reasons as to why they didn't want, you know, to integrate sports. But that was a talking point that they used as to why they wanted to keep the color league. And I didn't even think about that. And my cousin was like, that's some of the things that they used before they wanted to integrate sports. And again, so it's just an interesting, it's a nuance. Yeah. And I definitely think it is a more conversation and more things need to be had. And again, yeah, I feel like more trans leaders need to be involved in the conversation, more cis gendered females need to be in the conversation. And I don't honestly know what the answer is, because I don't, but I just know that whatever the conversation that is had and when people bring up their points, what I do know is you need to be respectful and you need to listen, and you need to I just feel like at times that people aren't listening, and it's just this back and forth thing, and it turns into this nasty, disgusting thing. And again, it takes away from Leah being the amazing champion that she is. And it just, like you said, it truly sucks for her to like have these accomplishments, but then people like discredit you. And not to discredit the people that are raising valid points. And again, you can raise a valid point and we can have a discussion, but it's just a lot.
Definitely. And I will say too, the thing that popped in my mind before you even said it was, I think it could be nice if there were, you know, leagues designated for some of these transgender athletes. Now, I can't speak for everyone on that, but that seemed like a reasonable solution that came into my mind. I can understand some of the drawbacks of that. But again, too, it's hard. You can't even, like, I mean, I obviously shouldn't be, but I'm sure even anyone in the community, it's like, everyone's going to have their own opinion.
Right.
You know, every transgender person is going to have their own opinion on this, and they might vary. So there's not like
a monolith. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So no, but I definitely wanted to put it on the roster, because like, we don't shy away from hard conversations. And if we don't have an educated opinion on it, we could say that. And so that's why I just wanted to put it on the topic, because I definitely think it is an important talking point. And I hope that this does inspire some conversation within the posse to have conversations with their loved ones and to talk about it. I'm curious to hear people's thoughts on it. But this has been by far a great play-by-play with the baby boy, Jack Atkins. I appreciate you coming through the Purple Pants podcast. Hopefully, you know, maybe if you're not busy, we can tap you for the month of August, because like, I really love your perspective on things, and I always just love to tap in with the baby boy, the Jack Atkins.
Of course.
Before we go,
I've been watching Big Brother. I've been watching the challenge too, so if you ever need a little guest for those, feel free. But yeah, whenever you need me, I'm throw up the bat signal. But yeah, it was a great, so many fun topics on this discussion, this play-by-play. So it was great to talk some sports with you.
Yes. And this has been your July's play-by-play.
Barb's got a message. Barb's got a message. Barb's got a message for you. Barb's got a message for you. Oh,
my beautiful friends. This is Miss Barb, and I'm so thankful for the privilege to be able to share a writing I just recently read, which speaks on loving yourself. Choose to love yourself entirely. Choose to embrace your flaws and forgive your mistakes. Choose to embrace yourself for all that you are. Loving yourself is about accepting yourself. It's fighting for yourself and believing in yourself. It's picking yourself back up after you fall because you know that you are worthy of standing tall again. Loving yourself is cherishing who you are and nurturing your body and spirit. It is acknowledging yourself and embracing yourself for who you truly are. It is treating yourself kindly. It is in the way you think and talk about yourself. It is in the way you fill up your cup. Before all else, you must nurture the relationship you have with yourself because it is the foundation for the relationship you have with the people and the world around you. If you are constantly hard on yourself, it will feel like the world is constantly hard on you. If you are constantly loving yourself, the world will love you too. How you treat yourself is how you allow the world to treat you. So be kind to yourself. Love yourself, my beautiful friend. You are so worthy of your love. Love you.
Who's the freak? Who's the freak? Who's the freak of the week? Who's that? Who's that? Who's that freaky, freaky, freak? Who's the freak of the week? Might be me, might be you, might be.
And we are on to this week's Freak of the Week. And baby, y'all know me. I love a good Law and Order. Okay. I prefer the original Law and Order to Law and Order SVU. Now, I love SVU. I love all the other ones they did, like the internet one, the CSI one. But for me, I love the original Law and Order. Okay. I could watch seasons 3 to all of the current ones. That's normally what I normally go to sleep to. It used to be the Golden Girls, but now I feel like I've seen every episode of the Golden Girls, so now I'm on a Law and Order. But listen, I love me some Law and Order, and I do love me some Law and Order SVU. But listen, over the weekend, baby, it was giving Raw and Order. Yes, I said Raw and Order. You know Chris Maloney, aka Stabler from SVU. You know he was on original, then they took him off for a couple of seasons, then they brought him back. Well, baby, brought to my attention, I feel like it's something I should have known. Okay, did y'all know July 14th was National Nude Day? Well, wait, what in? Okay, Freak of the Week. Well, listen, Chris was celebrating National Nude Day, and he has a Peloton ad. But baby, the 61-year-old Law and Order organized crime star, baby, bared it all on his Peloton. He was giving nude and not so rude. And listen, Stabler, Chris, for him to be 61 years old, he is definitely giving zaddy vibes. Took the internet by storm. And baby, if you go over there to Twitter, whoo, they was having a field day with those photos. I also went down that rabbit hole, but I had to be careful because y'all know the difference between Instagram and Twitter. Sometimes when you go down little hashtag on the Twitter, baby, it's giving XXXXX. What in the world is going on over there? Now, I didn't go down that rabbit hole too long, but I'm just saying I was there for the Chris Maloney photos, and I just love it. And I love just, you know, positivity and celebrating your body no matter how old you are, no matter what shape your body is in. Love yourself. And listen, Chris was on that Peloton loving himself. So we had, okay, to give the baby boy Freak of the Week. If you're not having a great day, just type in the hashtag Chris Maloney or type in Raw and Order. Actually, no, don't type in Raw. Don't type in Raw and Order, because, baby, you'll get something that you don't want. Type in the hashtag Chris Maloney and get into those photos, because it's amazing. If Chris Maloney is the freak of the week, that means this roster of an episode is coming to an end. I appreciate you so much for listening and always showing your baby boy some love. We will be back next week if P-Valley stop playing with us so we can break down on the next episode. But please ensure that you are subscribed to the Purple Pants Podcast. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. You know, my Uncle Pookie is riding around Philly. You can get the subscription out of his trunk. Make sure you hit subscribe. Make sure you write a review. Make sure you give your baby boy some 5 stars. Okay, write a review. I ain't seen a review since May. What's going on, Purple Pants Posse? And don't forget to tell a friend, to tell a friend, to tell a friend that it's the roster. Cause it's a
it's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better listen in public, might make your stomach hurt. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to unwind, you better get that box wine. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to get your snack, you better hurry right back though. It's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.